Today we're talking about 1917, and I haven't seen the first 1916 in the series, but I followed it close enough. I don't know about you.
Yeah, good one.
Do you think this is in the same like canon as Michael Cera and Jack Black's Year One?
It has to be. Like, by all means, surely. I wonder.
That's the first one, and then there's 1,915 in between.
I wonder how many movies out there just are the name of the year. I'm sure there's a bunch of them. I wonder how many you could like rope into this. I don't know.
2001: A Space Odyssey.
Oh shit! Yeah. 1408, the Stephen King one.
Oh yeah.
That might confuse some people, but
that's a prequel.
It's a prequel. Not much changed since the year 1408 in New York.
Welcome.
Welcome to Watch Out a Movie Podcast. I'm Mitch.
I'm Harry.
Today we're talking about the latest war movie, 1917.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. the plot revolves around a little known thing called World War One. I don't know if you've heard
popular,
of it.
Popularized from the film Wonder Woman that came out a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah.
Most people didn't know about it before then, but But now it's very popular.
Thanks to that documentary.
Yep. 1917 is a World War One movie set in the year 1917.
No.
Loosely inspired by stories from director Sam Mendes's grandfather who fought in World War One and had a similar task to the characters in the movie.
Mm-hmm. It's not one for one, is it? It's like a loose adaptation.
I think it says that I watched a little featurette this morning and I watched a little like it says in the post credits, or not in the post credits, but in the credits, that I'm pretty sure his dad was a messenger and it was his job to relay messages through the trenches. Mm-hmm. Not quite as intense as what happens in this movie, but it was like along the same lines, and I'm sure it was still like a very grueling job.
I can't imagine being a World War postman being the most fun.
Yeah, and you're also kind of like, if you think about it, you'd be like a target to the opposition because you're relaying important messages.
Yeah, communication is like one of the most important things on the battlefield, so stopping that.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what this movie's about. So,
pretty much. Do you want to go into a quick recap before we go into spoiler town?
Let's go into a little recap. So 1917 follows these two soldiers, two young soldiers in World War One, who are sent
English
out by the
soldiers.
Yeah, British soldiers fighting Germans in the trenches. And they are given the task of delivering a very crucial message to a fellow general on the other side of the battlefield. Essentially that he believes that the German forces are retreating, but they're actually trying to lure the English forces back to their like major barrage, essentially. So it's a trap.
Yeah, it's funneling them into a well-fortified trap.
And to raise the stakes, one of the two soldiers' brothers is in the battalion who will be in that push and will surely die. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So this movie is what I like to call, and there's a few movies out there, is like a roller coaster movie where there isn't a lot of plot necessarily. There's not a lot of narrative, but what it has is this experience that's very visceral. And this is probably one of the best roller coaster movies. A good example is like Dunkirk. A couple of years ago, and there's a lot of similarities here, where it's very similar, where it's just like there isn't this overabundance of like, you know, story for these characters, these backstories and why they're there. It's just that you understand them, what their situation's in, and the narrative is these set pieces they go through and just like the sheer terror of you being in those characters' like shoes.
Yes. It really does the whole point of how they tell the story and how it's been produced, in that I'm sure most people know at this point, but the whole movie is stylized to be to look like one take, which is a very common trend recently. This is probably one of the higher tier versions of that trend. Like I've been thinking about these kind of one take movies or the one take effect. I've seen it in movies, I've seen it in TV to like varying degrees of success. But it seems like the main purpose of it is for that aspect of time. Yes. They want you to feel this sense of time that has passed as immediate and unstopping. Like you're watching events happen in real time.
Yes. And what's important to tag on to the recap we got, they have a time limit of 6 hours. Is it 6 or 8?
It's 6 or 8. I think it's 8 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. So most of the movie is you experiencing their real time adventure, and like you know of this ticking clock, and the one take just super enhances this feeling of unbroken time, and you feel like you are actually on this journey with the characters.
I know you mentioned Dunkirk before.
Yes.
And that is thematically a very similar comparison.
Yes.
Because both in this movie and in Dunkirk, time is the enemy. And I'm pretty sure that's even the like tagline on the poster for 1917 is time is the enemy. They both handle that differently. Dunkirk very much does the whole disjointed timelines happening in different rates, like different kind of speeds and intervals that intercut in a way that portrays their relevance in the event of Dunkirk, where in this, it's purely for just that immersion. It's purely just that time limit, the stakes, it's a countdown for him to get from point A to point B through this whole elaborate World War One obstacle course. But besides that, there's really, like, you can't really compare this movie to Dunkirk besides the fact that it's a war movie. Besides that.
Yeah, like the more thing I was making a comparison to is more that how Dunkirk also does the thing where it's just soldiers. There's no like extensive backstories. There's no, you know, you see them sign up and you see that journey as the characters. It's just these characters are in this situation and this is what they have to deal with. I just got flashbacks to when my favorite scene in Dunkirk is when it's near the start, where, you know, the bombs are coming down the beach while they're all lining up to go onto the first wave of boats. And you just get the feeling of, like, watching those bombs drop and just like, oh, is that going to land on that character I've now established myself as a viewer in? This movie is that feeling for the whole thing. And it's terrific.
Yeah, it's a really interesting effect. And it works really well in this movie.
How good do you think the editor has this? As a video editor myself, I could just think getting one of these one take movies, putting all the clips in the timeline. I was like, well, my job's done because the takes are like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, take one, there's take two.
Apparently, Birdman, which is like the first major movie to do the one take thing, is 27 clips or something like that.
Oh, yeah. No, Birdman, it's very obvious when the cuts happen. With all these, with a lot of these one-cut movies and TV shows, like Birdman was probably the one that popularized it recently.
Yes.
There's all these moments where the camera will like just point to something for a little bit longer than it should, and then keep going. And it really, it's just like, clearly that's a cut point. Or there'll be a moment where like it gets knocked and looks down, like looking at you lose sight of the characters for a second and then it whips back, or they like walk through something and it goes dark for a second and then comes back. And in Birdman, it kind of got tacky and detracted from the experience in a little way. I felt like it was like, oh, there's the cut. Like,
sure.
I was always just watching for the cut. And to the same extent, that kind of happened with this movie for me. I had, as cool as the one take thing was and as well as it worked in this movie, the whole time I was watching the movie, I was just constantly like just whispering to myself, just like, oh, wow, look at, how did they get that shot? Oh my God. What, how'd they shoot it? Like it was like harder for me to get immersed because I was just so wrapped up in the technical feat that was this production. And that's like a weird criticism.
Yeah, but yeah. There's a couple, like, I tend to not have that issue as much. There's one take where it's clearly a CGI object.
Oh, yeah, in front of
the screen, and you're like, well, there it is.
For the first half, it's like these cuts are barely noticeable. Like, I found during the first half of the movie, it's like, it's really hard. It's like they're trying extra hard for this first half of the movie to hide it. And they did it really well. Like, it was really hard to notice the cuts in the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
It kind of, by the second half, it kind of like stops trying as hard in a way. Like, it kind of just like,
obviously, we're nitpicking this because it's an incredible technical feat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's incredibly well done. And just the, like, here's the thing. Some of this stuff they're doing on the film would be hard to do in multiple takes. Because this is very, the sets must be so intricate.
Oh, it's insane. I watched a 10 minute behind the scenes featurette that like IMDb released. And they actually dug up like a mile or something of trenches. Like,
shit.
It's insane. And then there's like the buildings, and then there's the whole the like big set piece of the movie is this whole kind of raid through a ruined town. Like this whole race through a ruined town. And it's just the most insane set. But we'll get into that more in spoiler town.
Yeah.
The specifics of that. But yeah, this movie, how many Oscars does this have in the bag? Like,
it's got
the production design, the cinematography. Like, it has, probably even directing. Like, even though I personally believe that pretty much every award should go to Parasite from last year, but
that ain't happening.
This movie undeniably is like, it is impeccably shot. Like, Roger Deakins was the director of photography, and he is just incredible.
What a gun.
And the direction for this was also extremely tight. Like, you couldn't have flubbed the directing on this. Like, everything comes through so clearly in this very minimal story. Like, it's a huge feat.
Yeah, and just like on the more technical side as well, is like the acting is really good from these two no-named
leads. Yeah.
And they're quite fresh faces, and they're really good.
They were really good. All the actors in this are really good. And they do an interesting thing with the actual known big actors who do appear in the movie, like Colin Firth and Benedict Cumberbatch. And
well, in this movie, not to spoil too much, Moriarty appears and Sherlock. So
I didn't even notice Moriarty.
He's the the first big one we meet where they go to the front lines of the trenches they're in, and he's like the drunk that's like, he's like the snarky one with a mustache that just inherited the role. That's Moriarty.
Okay. But yeah, they use these well-known actors as kind of like key military figures. Mm-hmm. So like the first major general you meet is Colin Firth.
Yep.
And so it's like, oh my God, him. And that kind of helps you like remember like who's important. Like there's a scene where Mark Strong appears later as well. And it has this kind of weird effect on my brain, like a 4D effect on my brain, a fourth wall breaking effect on my brain, where I just like, oh my God, that actor. Like, and they stand out to me, and it's like, they must be someone important. And like, they are.
I think it's very purposeful because you get the veteran actors, mostly because they're older as well. But these are like super well-known English actors to play these key military figures that like punctuate the movie. But like, you remember them because you know them, but also like, it's completely establishes them as the veteran in contrast to these fresh-faced actors.
Yeah.
And like, again, you would do that anyway because it's an age thing, but just the casting choices were really strong.
Yeah. All the performances, like it's crazy to see like such big actors in such small scenes.
Yes.
But they have such big impact.
Yes.
But yeah. Interesting. I was looking at the two leads in this movie. I cannot remember the names. I should have left like IMDb open. But they're both relatively unknown British actors. And I think one of them, the main guy, or not the main, like, oh God, I'm just waiting for the 1917 IMDb page to open up. George Mackey, who plays the character Schofield in this movie. I can say I've never seen him before, as far as I know. He was really good.
He's really good. I think he's going to be big.
Yeah, I hope so. He's actually playing Ned Kelly in The True History of the Kelly Gang.
Wait.
Which is coming out soon on Stan, I think, in Australia.
He's Ned Kelly?
He's Ned Kelly, yeah. I know a few people who worked on that production in Australia.
Huh.
I hope that's good.
I hope it's good.
But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see him in a different role as like a bushranger now instead of like a honorable British soldier.
Yeah, okay. Interesting career potentially there.
The other actor, Dean Charles Chapman.
So he's vaguely familiar.
He played Tommen Baratheon in Game of Thrones.
Oh, it's he was also in. He looks so different with like his natural hair.
Yeah. And he was also Timothy Chalamet's brother in The King, I think.
Oh. So
he's in The King.
He's appeared before in this podcast.
Yes, he has. But also, a friend of ours from an old job who I will not name actually met him once while traveling Europe. Apparently, he kind of really shyly tried to hit on her. And he was kind of like an awkward young man. Apparently, he was just really nice, but that's just funny.
That is funny. 60
Our own little direct connection. Yeah, 6 degrees of separation from fucking Tommen Baratheon. Yeah, and now that he's as famous as he gets in the future or not, like, that's, I'm not forgetting that.
No, never.
In the moment I saw him appear in the movie and realized it was him, I immediately just messaged our old friend and was just like, and she's just like, I know. That's funny.
That is funny.
That's funny.
I honestly didn't recognize him. I would have made that connection as well.
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's get into spoiler town, I think.
All right, I'm just going to quick scroll through my notes, see if there's anything else I have to say.
Okay.
We've done pretty good, actually, in covering my notes without actually looking at them.
Hey.
One thing this movie did bring up to me, in all those, there's a lot of scenes, like quiet scenes, of them just like walking through the battlefield.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, the camera's slowly following them. And it just never hit me until now just how gross trench warfare must have been.
Yes, you've bring up a very good point because,
like,
yeah,
the rotting corpses, the like lakes of just fucking craters and rats. Like, they just never thought about that. I guess there hasn't been that many movies based on World War One or like video games based on World War One because it was like such a sad and like, I guess, simple war, like it was just fought in the trenches the whole time. Like, there wasn't any huge dramatics like World War II or as much as World War II. And so I guess there's just not as much World War One in media. And seeing it in like this sharp, huge production, like high budget, you just really take your time with these characters getting like walked through this battlefield. And it's just so gross. And the barbed wire. Anyway, that's all I had to say. Trenches are gross is what I wrote in my notes.
Trenches are gross. This movie does some of the best on-screen corpses I've ever seen. They're for some reason, you can have a movie with 1,000 corpses and you're like, oh man, look at all these dead people. But this one, a single corpse, looks so frighteningly real and gross that you're just like, I don't like it. And it's just one.
Yep.
And
I think,
and as the movie goes on, you see more and more, and like it always felt real and never felt tacky going, look at all these dead bodies. It always felt like this is just a reality of the situation. And it's a good point. I'm no history buff at all. But as from my understanding is like World War One was like the first war to be fought in trenches at this scale. It's kind of a new thing.
Yeah.
Because of the technology of the time. And to think about like these kids weren't signing up for specifically trench warfare, because it kind of invented itself during the war. Correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, but I listened to a podcast once, and I think that's what they said.
I listened to a podcast once. But yeah, no, as far as I know, like...
movie podcast, and you should subscribe.
As far as I know, like, there weren't as many huge wars before World War One. Like, well, nothing of the scale, at least as far as I know.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. It's called a World War One. But just think about, like, the biggest war before then is, like, Napoleon.
Yeah, it was all horses and bayonets.
And, like, open on a field, and the numbers were, like...
Everybody just rushed each
like
other.
Like, 1%... of what it was. Yeah, like, and then, you know, modern artillery comes in and it changes the game.
Everything, yeah. With the all the technological advancements, like, war just has changed.
War. War has changed.
No, war never changes.
No, no. I, the quote. No, it's not. It's MGS4.
Oh, I got to mix up with the Fallout quote.
Yeah, MGS4 is like, fuck you, Fallout.
Yeah, fuck you, Fallout. Anyways, for the game, that's for the gamers in the audience.
Rise up.
But yeah, all right. I think let's get into spoilers.
Yeah.
All right.
So more war happens.
So more war happens. We follow these two. Very early on, the guy Schofield almost dies in like a cave-in because they come into an abandoned trench.
Can we just expand on like this set piece? Because this is one of my favorite set pieces of the movie. When they, so the build-up is they go over, they started the English trench, which is on like the front line between the English trench and the German trench, and they cross the no man's land into the German's trench. And the Germans aren't there because everyone thinks, well, they were told they retreated, but everyone doesn't believe that. And it was. It's like eerily retreated. And it's one of the quieter moments of the movie because they're just going around these empty trenches and they go under.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they're in these like, this bunker and it's like all the beds and all that. And they're like, what the hell? These beds are so much nicer than our bloody English beds. And this is so much bigger. Even the rats are bigger. And there's this weird CGI fucking rat. It's like...
It was pretty... The CGI was pretty good. It was. Like, for a second, I thought it was actually real.
Yeah. But then you see the size of it, and you're like, it looks like it's from, like, Dragon Age 1. And... Like, in terms of just the size.
It's a big rat. A Look, I don't have much experience with rats, but I hear that rats can get pretty fucking big.
Sure. But, like, it's just, like, comical to see.
Yeah.
And they find a wire, like a tripwire, and this rat fucking sets off this tripwire, and it's, like, terrifying.
All of a sudden, the whole place just caves in.
Oh,
and there's this frantic scramble.
It's so...
Very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Things are falling around, falling down in the background, and he just manages to dig up his friend, who's blinded by the dust, and he drags him out, and they have to like jump a gap. They have to go like a different route to exit because of the cave-in, and they just manage to get out, and it's just like, oh, that old getting buried alive kind of nightmare. That would have been an intense scene to see at like an IMAX theater or something.
Yeah, just
but yeah.
But like the one take is like in full effect during this whole thing. You see the rat like going around. They're worried in real time. It feels like it's a real thing that's happening, and the consequences that you know there's no lost time in this journey. Everything is happening. It's not obscured by cuts.
Yeah. And,
so, and then they have to make a blind jump. And it's so good. This whole set piece is so good. This is when I was like, yep, I'm watching something incredible right now.
So, yeah. So, pretty much, I've forgotten the fucking characters' names again. So, Blake saves Schofield in this collapse of the bunker and brings him out to safety. And they recover from that and they continue on their walk, and they come across this kind of abandoned country house where they then look into the distance and see two British fighter planes take down a German plane, which then like fucking beelines straight towards them and crashes into the barn next to them. and they run over and they pull out the German soldier who's like on fire.
Mm-hmm. They show him mercy.
I guess just out of like, yeah, it's like a mercy thing. And as Schofield goes to grab water to either get him or put on the fire or whatever, you hear, and this part was like shocking. This part completely caught me off guard.
Yeah.
You hear his friend Blake like shouting, and you turn back and you see that the German soldier has like stabbed him, and they then shoot him. But then Blake dies, like just slowly on the spot.
It's so fucked.
Like fades out. Just completely caught me off guard.
Yeah.
Like, I thought this movie was going to be like the, you know, two best buddies making it through the battlefield.
But he doesn't even make it to 20 minutes. Like,
no, it's like completely took me off guard.
That whole like sequence is kind of bizarre. It's the one thing, like, I don't love the plane crashing into the barn. It's a great visual and it's like intense and it really works well for the trailer. But it's like, it's one of the most implausible things that happens in the movie. Cause it looks kind of, it kind of looks like it could be a scene from like Uncharted. But like, it works really well, especially the consequences of it.
Yeah, this movie, like you said before, it is a roller coaster. Like, there's some big, heightened, over dramatic moments that just for the thrill of it, like, they work in the movie, but it's like, this is, I wouldn't really believe that happened in real life kind of situation.
It was a brief moment to take me out.
Yeah, there's a few of those moments throughout the movie. I found the whole movie to be just like a bit over dramatic, but it was still so effectively produced and like, it still worked as like a compelling story. It kind of feels like a video game, the way that it moves.
Yeah,
it makes me think of like Uncharted, and like there's all these different levels that they run through.
It's because it's so set piecey.
Yeah, but anyways, so Blake dies, and he's the one whose brother is on the front line.
So he was effectively the protagonist for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah,
he was the
driving
force.
He like. Yeah, he was the one who got like given the mission, was like told to grab like a friend to go with him. Like, he seemed like he was the main character, and he's first billed on the cast.
Very clever.
So like, very clever, yeah. But then it follows this Schofield who really takes up the reins as an actor, like George Mackey. He really carries this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has like, I don't know, more responsibility. Like, he has to. It's like he had the job to, like, carry out the mission to carry this thing.
Carry out the mission, like, that's going to save thousands of lives. But now he has to do it for, like, the honor of, you know, finishing the job for his friend and saving his friend's brother.
Yes.
Lessening the grief of that family, you know?
Yeah. That's what I was trying to say, but the words just did not come out. But yeah, and so then we follow Schofield, as he continues on this quest. He gets picked up by a couple other soldiers who then carry him in a jeep, like another part of the way. That's where he meets like Mark Strong and a bunch of like random soldiers who are going off to a different battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Who legitimately feel like real people. Like, there's this smart ass guy who's like the class clown, but like, he feels like a realistic portrayal of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this just feels like this movie really heightens how young these kids are, really.
There's such a range of like ages.
Yeah.
But these guys are probably like, it feels like they're like those kind of kids who would be like 18 or 19.
They sign up to do
fight in the war.
To fight for their country, but also for like glory and adventure, but then just like,
they're
like sidelined by the reality of it.
Yeah, there's even the scene where Schofield is talking to Blake about how he gave away his medal he got from a prior event in the war. And Blake's like, why would you do that? Like, those things are so honorable. Like, people die for those. And Schofield's just like,
it's tin.
Just traded it for wine. It's tin with a ribbon, you know?
Yeah.
And
which made me feel like less that twist was going to happen.
Yeah, he seemed like he didn't care as much. He seemed less invested. He seemed like disenfranchised.
Mm.
where the other guy, Blake, was more like he was more involved in like the patriotism, like the honor. But yeah. So he continues on. He then has this really intense, in a very like Uncharted-esque set piece, as he like is walking across the remaining like kind of side of a bridge to get across this gap.
Yeah, before then that he's been taken on a truck that would actually bypass most of his journey and would get to him ahead of time. But they're stopped because a bridge is knocked out. And so he immediately, everyone's like, they're like, sorry. And he just goes immediately without even thinking of like, oh, maybe this can be fixed, blah, blah. He just immediately goes, I'll find another way. He doesn't have time.
Yeah. He's just,
which was so good.
I don't have time. And so he tightrope walks across this really narrow, like shaft of metal. And then jumps across and starts to climb up the other
while
side.
He's getting shot by a sniper.
While a sniper just out of nowhere, just like bang, starts shooting. And it's such a shocking moment. Like I jumped in my seat just because the audio mixing was really good. Reminds me of like in Dunkirk where like the bullets flew and you could like fucking like feel them.
I don't know the exact name, but in my cinema screening, it was like advertised as like objective, like object-based sound systems where it's like, the sound like is simulated to sound like it's a, like actually projecting onto like the materials. Cool. I don't exactly know how to do that. I'm not an audio engineer. I don't exactly know how it works rather. But I actually felt the difference when I saw that, like they had this really impressive, like 3D representation of what it would be like. And I was like, oh, I can actually hear that.
Yeah. But no, it was really cool, really effective moment. He's like narrowly avoiding getting shot. Although my friend did have a good point when he was watching this. He was like, it's like every set piece is just everyone is missing. Like every shot is missing. Like it's like a Star Wars stormtrooper.
It gets a bit like that. But also I feel like it's again, real because like the only shots that really hit, there's a few good hits with a gun from distance, but all the other ones, like for example, the German soldier, that knifed the other kid, he shot him at pretty close range. He didn't miss. But all these like long range shots are like whiffing.
Yeah. But yeah. And then there's this intense sequence of him trying to like take out the sniper. It's like kind of a cover based. He's trying to like turn based shooting, trying to like get the shot in. And then it,
how many video game metaphors can we make?
It's not going to stop for me.
No,
it's not. But yeah, eventually it seems like he either hit him or he manages to keep up a cover fire and he runs into the like kind of townhouse that the sniper's posted in. He makes his way up the stairs, opens the door, and he's just sitting there and both of them just fire like bang, bang, right off the other. Schofield just like falls back. Like I think the bullet hits his helmet.
Yeah, it hits his helmet and like grazes him a bit, but he falls.
And he just falls back, hits his head, and then it's just like a cut. Like the only like distinct cut in the movie when he gets knocked out.
He loses two or three hours.
Yeah, and then he wakes up and it's dark. Like the sun has gone down. He comes up and looks, and he comes up and looks through the hole the sniper was looking through, who's now dead because he shot him. And sees, like, I think it's an active battlefield, like, or was an active battlefield, but a flare. And this is probably the big visual set piece of the movie. And, like, watching the behind the scenes, it's really cool, the rig they set up for it. Like, a flare gets fired. And it's almost like a Dark Souls level, like the level of ruin. It's like an absolutely destroyed town. It's just ruins and like cobblestone brick walls.
It's fucked up French
and
town.
A flare launches across, which is probably one of the coolest
lit
and designed scenes I've seen all year.
How it's like
the way
the
light moves, the shadows like move. It's like a painting. It's like this surreal dance of light.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then he makes his way through. He runs into an enemy guard and there's like a chase. And like the whole time, the shadows are just like stretching and twisting and like warping as the light like shoots over into the horizon. And it's just like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was incredible. Like, again, it felt like an overdramatic video game level, but it was so cool.
It was so stunning. Very and cool. And when, like, the bullets are, like, just whiffing him and he, like, manages to outwit them by double back, like, backtracking and going into a side thing.
Yeah.
And then he meets this French girl who is, like, living under in this basement with a child. And it's not her child.
Yeah.
It's a child she found.
Yeah. And they have, like, this kind of disconnected conversation because, like, he knows limited French and she barely knows English, but we can get, like, occasional subtitles from what she says. And I can't remember what they talk about, but it's very much just, like, the horrors of war kind of moment. And they just talk about, war sucks, you know? And eventually he decides to leave because he has to keep going.
It's a moment where he could literally just stay here for a bit and forget about his mission. And there's that brief moment where he's actually forgotten about his mission. But when he realizes the time that has passed, because he hasn't had time to think about that really, because he's being chased. And he's just like, I've got a bolt.
My housemate described that moment as it's the classic protagonist remembers what he's fighting for before act three moment.
Yeah.
When he sees that baby, he remembers, like, oh, it's all worth it, you know, like, life is precious, you know.
There's a lot of metaphors of that. Because there's, like, the baby. There's a lot of, like, the cherry blossoms before. Not the cherry blossoms, but, like, the plum blossoms or whatever it was.
Yeah. Like, again, it's a pretty simple narrative for the movie. Yes. It's like the theme of this movie is war is bad.
Oh,
but
so deep, so daring.
But yeah, then he continues on. I can't remember if it was before or after, but there's this, like, kind of sequence where he strangles a German soldier.
I think that was before.
And there's another sequence that happens. Very cool, where he strangles the German soldier
in, like, the shadows.
While the other one's just kind of, like, drunkenly stumbling in the background. And she's, like, very tense. It's like he's not really looking because he can't hear because he's strangling him. You can't, like, it's like a silent takedown. This is very intense.
Yeah, it was really cool.
But then he continues on. Where'd he get after that? What happened after that?
See, this is where I'm a blank in my memory. Somehow he ends up in a river, but I don't know how he gets in that river.
Oh. Yeah. He's, like, fighting, and I think more guards find him, and he makes a run for it. And eventually, I can't remember how, but he, like, falls into a river and gets washed away into, like, rapids and, like, gets the shit kicked out of him by some rocks. He's, like, floating for ages.
Honestly, it's one of the scariest scenes because, like, it's terrifying. I would hate that.
There's a moment after the calm, like, after it's, like, he's fallen off the waterfall and he's managed to survive. Where he, like, grabs onto, like, a big floating branch and just, like, you can see that he's fucking exhausted. And you see him, like, kind of faint for a second and drift under the water before, like, jumping back up. Mm. And it's just like, oh, big falling asleep in the bath vibes.
Is that a common vibe for you?
But, yeah. No, but it's a fear.
Oh.
But, yeah. Then he gets out of the river and he finds a bunch of soldiers who are all, like, in the middle of some kind of prayer or something, like some kind of
I think it's just like a song battle performance
type kind of thing. And something like that. And he then discovers that is actually the battalion he's looking for, but they're, like, one of the later waves.
Yeah, because at this point he thinks he's late.
Yeah, and he gets there and they're like, oh no, like, they're just up ahead, like, we're about to go. And he, like, fucking rushes through the trenches. There's, like, so many. He sees hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of soldiers that he's, like, barging past who are all on their way to this battlefield where they're, like, certainly doomed if they proceed.
Oh, the anxiety and of running through, like, past all those people because, like, their trenches are so thin is, like.
Especially when he's out actually on the trench where with the front line who are waiting for the signal to go, and he's just, like, don't let him go, and they're like, fucking get out of here, who are you, like, we're going, and he's like, where's the general, and it's like, it's further down, and, like, the first wave goes and you see them all run off and you're just like, ah, and he makes the run. There's a point where he has to run across the battlefield because the police want to get there, so
he has to, like, it's probably cut around, like he can't go through everyone because they're filling the trenches. So he goes onto the battlefield before any wave has started and like runs weaponless. By the way, he's lost his weapon a long time ago at this point.
Yeah, I can't even remember when he had a weapon.
He loses it when he strangles the German because he had to put it down on the ground and he wasn't able to pick it up.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, and this is one of the big, big spectacle scenes, which is in all the trailers of him like running through the battlefield while all the soldiers rush out to war and like bombs are going off behind him. He's like colliding with soldiers because he's running like across and they're all running out.
Yeah.
And it keeps following. And he's just running and running and running. And eventually he makes it just as like the second wave is starting to line up. And he makes it to fucking the general. He pushes past like the guards who try and throw him back. And played by Benedict Cumberbatch, he meets the general. And the general's like, fuck you, get out of here. Like, who's this punk? Like, who do you think you are? And he's like, fucking take this letter, you son of a bitch. Like, fucking, you're not the orders, don't do this, it's a trap. Don't you do it. And you can see, and there's a line earlier that Mark Strong says, which is like, it's something along the lines of like, be careful who you tell, like, tell this to. Like,
your orders. He says, bring a witness to back you up.
Because there are people who are ready to fight. Like, they want to fight.
Mm.
And this news to them is, like, the opposite of what they want.
Mm.
And they might, like, they're all amped up, ready to fucking run out and die. Like, they want to go out and fight. And they don't want to hear that they're, like, going to retreat. Like, people will, like, yeah. Anyways, it's a warning, something like that. And, like, Benedict Cumberbatch is very much like, just like, get out of here. We're doing this. Like, they're on the retreat, and eventually he gets them to read the letter, which Benedict does a complete 180. And she's like, fuck. All right. Retreat. Bring them all back. Shit.
No, he doesn't, though.
I thought he does.
No, he said.
He canceled the movie.
No, he didn't.
But then, like, the first wave still ran out, but they didn't. They held off and called for retreat. And then he did this talk to the Schofield saying, like, look, they, like, every day is just different intel. Like, now they're going to say retreat because it's a trap. But, you know, a week from now, they're going to be attack at dawn. And he has this speech about how it's like, eventually it'll just hit the point where, like, it's the last man standing. That's how we win. And, like, these little things don't matter. Like, these little decisions that affect hundreds and thousands of lives in the war, like, just kind of come and go by, like, these general orders and stuff. This very disenfranchised moment. And then he pretty much kicks him out of the general's office. And to which the guard is like, good job. Just the first, like, pat on the back.
I do he's like got the whole Benedict Cumberbatch now saying, well, now fuck off. And it was just a good moment. I was objecting before, but yes, he doesn't call off the first wave, obviously, because it's too late. But yeah, he does like back down.
Yeah. Very, very regrettably, but he does.
Mm.
And then he talks to a guy and's like, Where's Blake's brother? And they're like, oh, he was out in the first wave. And he's just like, fuck, it's just the biggest, like, god damn it moment. And they're like, you know, maybe check the wounded or the dead, like the tents. And then he goes, we follow Schofield as he walks through all these, like, wounded, injured soldiers, like, dead bodies and, like, people crying in pain, just calling for Blake's brother. And after making it all the way through, he looks up and he sees him. He sees Blake's brother, who's played by Richard Madden, who was Robb Stark from Game of Thrones.
So the only actors that appear in this are from Game of Thrones and Sherlock.
Yeah. And they have this very kind of tragic, kind of heartfelt moment where he tells them about his brother's death and how it's just very sad. And he was there for him. And it's just kind of just this nice little sad, tragic moment, men holding back tears kind of stuff.
It's
they shake hands.
It's probably my favorite little acting moment in this movie. Like, it's a really powerful scene.
It's very sad. Very, like, downplayed. A lot of the acting in this movie is very downplayed. Like, it's clearly, like, people trying to put up a brave face. And that scene really, Richard Madden really does well in that scene to...
It was such a...
character.
Yeah, it was just such a realistic take of, like, this character that's got such bad news but knows he has to keep, like, fighting on and, like, he's trying to hold back. But, you know, he can't and you could... Yeah, he's just, like, torn between, like, holding back and just, like, letting go these emotions.
Yeah.
It's intense.
It feels very... Very feels very real, like believable.
Yes.
Feels very realistic.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then he wanders off into the field, sits down and looks at a photo of his wife and daughter, I think. And then just kind of like sits back and it ends, which is a paralleling the shot which the movie opens on, which is him essentially waking up from a nap.
Mm.
And yeah, and that's the movie.
Yeah. That's the whole year.
I think
the whole 1917. Yeah, I think, yeah. That's all that happened.
Yep. Feels weird to actually like effectively chronicle the entire narrative without getting lost in the middle like we usually do.
Yeah, it's a simple narrative, so it's easier to do.
I think this movie being such a simple narrative, like we really have to dissect all the little moments.
Yes.
Because there's not a lot to talk about besides that. Like we could have summarized this movie in like 10 minutes to be like, it's so pretty and technically big and cool, but there's a story. There's a story too.
But the set pieces have so many like little moments to talk about, and that's like the cool thing about this movie. And like, yeah. Would you recommend this movie?
I would recommend this movie. This movie could have been really bad or really trashy or just really like
Oscar baity,
you know, patriotic, you know. Oscar baity in the bad way, but it could have been like very, you know, oh, patriots, men are tough and soldiers are great kind of thing. But it handles it in a way where it's very much embracing the tragedy of it all and the sadness. And I like that. But the consensus I came up for this movie was 1917 effectively blends huge, occasionally overdramatic battle set pieces with quiet personal moments of character to paint a greater portrait of humanity amidst a world at war. That's my little Rotten Tomatoes consensus.
That's quite good. That's quite good. I would also very recommend this movie. See it in the highest possible way you can, if that's in the cinema or at home with a really good sound system. It's all about the technology because that's half the... I think the impact of this one.
I
think it may be my favorite World War One movie off the top of my head.
I can't think of many other World War One movies besides Wonder Woman.
It's definitely better than Wonder Woman.
It's better than Wonder Woman. That's my new consensus. It's better than Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman was pretty good.
Yeah.
So this movie is
pretty good. Pretty good.
That's like as glowing as all my praise sounds. It's not my favorite movie of the year. Like I think it's pretty good. It's a fun roller coaster ride, but it's like probably not going to be one of my best of the years. At least currently, I don't feel like it's going to be one of my top movies of the year. Like it was a fun watch. It was a good roller coaster. It was a good watch.
Yes,
but I'll probably have forgotten about it in 2 years' time.
It's a simple cinematic experience that is both powerful and fun in an engaging sort of way. Not a fun because war is not fun, but it's a good watch start to finish. No bad bits in it at all. There's nothing that needs to be cut, I don't think. And like, yeah, I just think it's a testament to technical filmmaking, and I think it's a testament to specifically wartime storytelling. So it's a strong recommendation from me.
I'll give it a recommendation. Like, if you like this kind of stuff, if you're into the technical side, if you like Dunkirk, give it a watch.
Yeah.
Definitely
better than Wonder Woman.
Can't wait for the sequel.
1918?
Yeah. Wonder what's going to happen next. Has to pick up where the last one left off.
Yeah, I just genuinely don't know where this franchise is going. It's been running for a while. Yeah,
Clearly it's a franchise. Like they could like what how long did when did World War One end? Was it 19
Oh, don't ask me that.
Oh fuck. I'm running World War One. Cause this is like the sequel potential I'm looking up.
Oh, okay. Let's see
what we got. It went to 1918, so they could make a sequel.
They could make a sequel. I wonder what adventures he's going to get up to next. He's going to get another letter, and the stakes are going to be higher. And so they have to top the one shot. So instead, it's going to be a split screen movie, and you're going to get the one shot, but from two different angles.
There's two different versions of the movie that you can see, and they're both filmed in one take at the same time, but two different perspectives.
Oh, yeah. And then
going at one.
And in the middle, it meets and then crosses over because the two plot lines.
Whoa, meet. It swaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like red and blue version, but of World War One.
Yeah. It's just like, and then you follow, yeah, the narratives, but there's the one moment in the middle where they meet. It's like that music video, Sugar Water.
Yeah. That's true.
But World War One.
That would be fucking cool. That would be really cool if a movie did that. I can actually think of a movie that does kind of do that, but it's spoilers to say it. So because of how the movie's produced, it's kind of a spoiler to say that. So okay. Like I can't even say what the movie is.
Shit, no.
But I'll tell you later, but actually maybe I won't.
Oh man.
You know what we can do? Can you think of any other good one-take movies or TV shows to recommend? Did you ever see Gravity?
Yes.
It was okay.
Yeah. There's an episode in Mr. Robot Season 3. That's all one take.
I was hoping you'd bring this up.
That was pretty good. It was very much, you could... That's probably the sloppiest.
Very much Birdman style.
You can, because the cuts are really fucking obvious in that. But it really works in the narrative.
Yeah, it was also definitely the lowest budget, but in terms of like the whole sense of time and urgency and like following the direct, fuck, what's the word? When it follows it beat for beat, like in real time, it really, in that episode of Mr. Robot, like that episode had to be in real time because it was like an immediate event and we're following the main character dealing with it.
It was really good
for like clearly the lowest budget. Of compared to these movies.
True Detective has an episode that has a large segment that's in one take.
Ooh. I have a problem where I often don't notice because I'll be so immersed.
True Detective does that really well where you didn't realize how much it like pulled off. I think that one is what really sparked a lot of the one take interest.
Yeah, it was that and Birdman.
Birdman like
magnified it. I think you can't talk about one takes without mentioning Alfonso Cuarón, the Mexican director. He did Roma recently, was an incredible movie that came out last year.
I haven't seen that
yet. Out on Netflix. It's very good.
I know it is.
But he doesn't do one takes, though he did do Gravity, which I just mentioned, which is stylized to look like one take with CGI, and for that same reason where it follows this real-time space disaster. But I thought that movie, again, that was just like a roller coaster movie, similar to 1917, but nowhere near as good.
No.
Like very CGI and over the top. But he does more of a thing with long takes.
Mm-hmm.
Like he'll do these really big long takes. He did Children of Men. That was one of his earlier movies. Which is
one of the best.
Incredible.
That one take. It's long.
Its long takes are all incredible. That movie in general is incredible. I watched it again like a month ago, like for the first time in like 10 years, and it just completely blew me away.
Would you recommend Children of Men?
I would recommend Children of Men. I would love to do an episode of Children of Men. Children of Men is so good.
Go see Children of Men as well.
Children of Men by Alfonso Cuarón. He also directed The Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes, the best Harry Potter.
Yeah, I know.
We're talking about one takes.
What were we talking about before one takes?
This is like a movie. I remember. There was another one take I just had, but now I've lost it. Oh, Russian Ark. Legitimately the only like one take movie where it's actually just a camera that rolls for the whole movie.
Yeah. I feel like if you're going to do a one-take movie, like, and it is, you really, really want to go for it, like, you can't fake it. You need to actually do the one take. Like, I get it. You don't have, I'm not saying you have to, but like, people, I see people talking about how this is a one take movie, but it's like, no, it's just, I don't know. What am I talking about?
It's the style of one take, right?
It's my bedtime. Yeah. But I have so much more respect for the movies which have actual one takes. Like real ones where they don't cut. I haven't seen it, but there's a Dutch movie. I think it might be on Netflix. I'm not sure. Called Victoria. That is a heist movie, and it's, as far as I know, unless I've been tricked, it's all actually one take.
Right.
Which is awesome. Yeah. And there's another movie.
Again, really easy for the editor. Blonk.
Oh,
the timeline. Maybe a comic.
Yeah. Just drag the file straight into Media Encoder.
The camera operator is the editor. He's like, it's done.
Yeah, there it is. Maybe you put a little color correct on it.
Put on credits and you're done.
Another one I watched recently that's incredibly good. If you can find it, it's a Japanese horror comedy called One Cut of the Dead.
Yes.
Oh, it's good. So funny. Very good.
Yes.
Go into it blind. That's all I have to say. Go into it blind. Don't look it up.
I got turned off by that movie because the reviews were very bad, but I've only heard stellar recommendations.
What? Oh, it's so good. But you have to watch the whole thing.
No, I don't.
That's a weird thing to say about a movie.
I don't watch the whole thing when I watch a movie. Idiot.
Yeah. That's such a, what the fuck am I talking about? You have to watch the whole thing is my review for a movie. You have to. It doesn't count if
sometimes
you don't.
Sometimes I just like flick half an hour in the middle, you know, whatever. That's why I'm on a movie podcast.
Anyways, my review for 1917 is watch One Cut of the Dead, the 2017 Japanese horror comedy. Go in blind. That's it for me.
Okay. Still better than Wonder Woman.